Good afternoon. Thank you very much for coming in the middle of an electronic force field, it seems, sound field. My name is Peter Wintonik. I think we'll be getting some stragglers coming in because of another major event was just finishing at 1:30, the DOC Summit at the Industry Center there. I'm with a small production company called Necessary Illusions in Montreal. I'm one of the co-founders of the Doc of Gora, kind of roving gypsy digital conference, along with Amit Brr, who's a producer from Canada and Israel, Fleur Noppertz, formerly with the ITFA International Co-Financing for International Documentary, the Forum in Amsterdam is what we call it, and now working with DocFest in Sheffield, England. Cameron Hickey, we call the web jockey, but he's actually a documentary filmmaker working out of Philadelphia with Pattern Films, developing many kind of new media iterations of the documentary experience. And today he will be negotiating and arguing with the Apple computer, it seems. It's going to be a kind of high technology versus low technology experience because somehow a cup of coffee was spilled upon the keyboard, and we'll see who wins that argument. The Agora in Greek, and Cameron would know because he's of Greek descent, means marketplace, a kind of in just below the Acropolis there in Athens. We went to visit a place and sort of got inspired to create a documentary version of that meeting place and marketplace, and really motivated by the desire to bring the old technologies face-to-face with the new technologies. Getting inspired by people like Neil Sealing here, who will be one of our moderators and has also joined this kind of Doc Agora collective of contributors. We're a nonprofit organization, and we're really like a band of gypsies parachuting into real-life festivals like Amsterdam and Sheffield and now Hot Docs. So for their hosting of this event, I really would like to thank Brett Hendry and Chris McDonald and Jen Hobbs, who have helped us arrange space and helped us get you here, along with the CBC Digital Division of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, who are sponsoring, along with the documentary organization, this event. Really, the purpose of Doc Agora is to look at new forms and new platforms and new ways of financing what we call socially engaged and creative documentary content. We would stop at the word documentary, but we're talking about a fuller and wider spectrum of definition, I think, for the kind of digital documentary, the documentary of the future. It's also a way, I think, of deprogramming ourselves from programmers and cutting off or maybe widening the possibilities for financing to bring our colleagues from the commissioning world in broadcasting closer to their own digital divisions within the same broadcasters, or to bring all of us together into this Doc Agora kind of tent and to develop eventually kind of new ways of financing documentary, which may be happening at places like Michelle's Toronto Documentary Forum, but also augmented perhaps by the possibilities of raising money online for specific projects and programs. So we're, as I say, a kind of feast of fools trying to understand all of this confusion and welcome to you. And I will welcome now the moderator of the I welcome now Sarah Diamond, who is, I find, my spiritual mother and colleague, who was the head of the Banff New Media Institute of Banff Center of the Arts for many years, for a dozen years, really. But before that was a documentary filmmaker making video art and around struggle and women's issues and unions. But she's doing all sorts of wild things, essentially working with programmers programming the future, I think. And recently she was named president of the Ontario College of Art and Design here, one of the oldest art schools in the world, and she's transforming those young minds into people who could come to the Doc Agora as a full-time experience. Sarah Diamond.
Hi, everybody. Thank you very much for being here today. I thought I would try and, hack my way through this, figuratively. But I thought I would try and talk about really three things to set up the discussion today. So the first is conversation about oscillations in the nature of control, in particular post 9/11. The second is changes in the experience and structure of time as lived experience. In terms of media and in terms of daily life in the 21st century, because time, after all, is our medium as documentary makers. And the third is the cultural move from participatory inquiry in documentary as something that's either autorial or something that's sort of about collaboration, to increasingly a culture of participation, including user-generated content and the kind of shift that represents. while I speak, depending on the will of the wetware now in the computer, we're going to do some parallel processing. So I've done a kind of indiscrete choice of hybrid media, text, video, et cetera, that are kind of illustrative of some of what I'm saying and give you, I think, a sense, I hope, as we move through the 15 minutes or so of some of the examples, some of the sort of challenges and excitement in how documentary is moving. So first of all, to talk about issues of distributed control versus command and control, we're in a very contradictory moment here, I think, and by here I mean in this sort of global context. There's no question that spectacle, you know, the kind of culture which is very much about watching and the culture of the kind of downside of reality television, perhaps, or the kind of seduction of it, and voyeurism has certainly increased with the webcam and now mobile phone capabilities and the very dramatic and rapid uptake of reality television. Sorry. This will end. Okay, in the early 21st century, and there's some really interesting sort of academic writing right now, equally contradictory about reality television, of academics who, you know, are really seduced by it and who are kind of horrified by it. But it's a very important sort of moment, I think. And you know, Peter Wintonik, of course, has made a very critical film that sort of looks at that path from Verite. We also have video streaming and chat over the web, which has become really ubiquitous. But it also involves citizen dialogue and documentation of political concerns, sociable media, which is another way of talking about user-generated content, and the sharing and altering of cultural products through file sharing and VJ-DJ culture. And we're going to look here at a mother from Gaza, if you don't mind putting that blog up here. So we're going to navigate through some of this material as I talk, and I'm not going to speak to it until at the end. But at the same time, technologies are increasingly ubiquitous, as I mentioned, and also biologically invasive. So since 9/11, we've seen the absolute rampant uptake of CCTV everywhere. And RFID tags, which if you don't know what they are, they're basically memory tags that can follow you through all kinds of systems, allow the movement of humans to be monitored in real time as well as after the fact. So, oh good, things are working here. when you're finished navigating that, if you can go to the surveillance camera players, who are a very interesting group that are kind of dealing with a sort of dialogue with CCTV, and who they're addressing, and you'll see their work, they're addressing both kind of publics who are concerned about surveillance. They're also, frankly, addressing a whole audience of hidden security guards and police who are watching CCTV. So it's very interesting sort of thinking about audience. As Alex Galloway points out, he says, resistance is built into the internet. The examples of software art, open source activities, and network art and politics provide examples of protocols for computer protocol practices. And he, as well as theorists like Elkir Roseanne Stone, Geert Lovink, who's a leader, really, of the open source movement, argue that the internet has opened possibilities for new forms of resistance. Stone proposes that virtual worlds, and we're going to hear a little bit about that later from Femke, provide new opportunities for the expression of new subjectivities through the fusion of body, interface, and virtual worlds. And these are sort of documentary media of great potential. They're fictional and documentary. They kind of collide practices. How are we doing here? Great. Okay. So many participants in online communication are contradictory, protective of their right to contribute to dialogues and to control their data at the same time that they want to shop online, feel secure against terrorism, et cetera, et cetera. So aside from the development of online participatory culture, there are other responses to surveillance. And those who are monitored consistently find ways to resist, as is evidenced by many workplace studies. And in fact, there's really a lot of very compelling documentary about forms of resistance. The internet and its allied technologies are best understood, therefore, as a kind of terrain of negotiation and at times conflict around structures of surveillance, lateral flow, and command and control. So very kind of distributed media, at the same time all kinds of efforts to assert the kind of traditional hierarchy of media. So we can never forget this as documentary producers. This is sort of fundamental to how we understand, I think, our practice in the 21st century. So now the second point, and maybe if you show Keith Piper's work, that would be great. Thank you. The second point that is that we can argue at the same time that there are profound changes in the nature of time. So bear with me as I kind of move through this. We're in a time that we can describe a lot of our daily experience and also our media experience as being full of presence, synchronous as well as asynchronous, highly immersive and thick. We're kind of living thick time, where time is not only moving forward, but we're sort of immersed in it. And you're also polite because you're not sitting here on your mobile phones, your Blackberries are off, and you're actually not on your computers doing something else, unlike most of the student population these days. So perhaps this doesn't refer to how you live your lives, but for many people, they live in thick time. So philosopher and media theorist Gilles Deleuze proposes that it's only if we rethink time that we'll be able to transform our future and ourselves. He says, through memory concepts, art and philosophy, we can move backwards and forwards through the flow of time. We can think other durations, and we can disengage perception from the apparatus of prompted actions, unquote. He suggests that time should be an explosive force, a glue. He says, time is becoming without ground and without foundation. So great, we're into Horizon Zero, thank you. Deleuze describes the importance of what he calls the event, a way perhaps of rethinking real-time citizen journalism, location-based or interactive experiences that require the active engagement of audiences. He says, there's a present of the future, a present of the present, and a present of the past, all implicated, rolled up in the event, and thus simultaneous and inexplicable. I think he mystifies this a bit. But this sort of notion of how time is changing dramatically in the media that we're working with, I think, is fundamental to us. And I think this is where it's valuable at times to... I'm sorry. I think that this spill on the keyboard somehow moved itself into my throat. How interesting. So I think this is where sometimes resorting to the philosophers can be very helpful. In the kind of presentation of images, the order of time is not succession, but in fact a kind of topological experience. So what he's talking about here is the way that, you know, events are thick, the way we live in time is very deep, and that at the same time media is increasingly, frankly, everywhere in the world that surrounds us. So this kind of creates an experience of time that's very much about sort of process, and he uses the term becoming, which we may want to think about as, rather than, you know, thinking about a sort of linearity of time within documentary practice, and particularly I'm talking about new media practice, although you can see the sort of residuals of this in a lot of linear work, to think about the experience of being immersed in a documentary as one of becoming, of transformation. There's other philosophers post Deleuze who've picked this up. Rosie Bridotti, who is a contemporary ethicist, she talks a lot about how time and space are gendered. In other words, that issues of sort of gender identity and the way we experience time really are traditionally quite different from how men and men and women, biological men and women, socialized men and women experience time. So she argues that it's important to think about the ways that time, in fact, needs to be disrupted. And she's a very strong sustainability ecology advocate. And she talks about the ways that language is a living matter. And we need to really think about the kind of musical variations in the ways that we kind of construct media, particularly media that engages with issues of ecology and sustainability and has a sort of dialogue with the earth. So her ideas about time encompass not only humans, but living matter. And she says bodies and time, so she means the way that we live our experience, are embodied and embedded entities fully immersed in webs of complex interaction. So I'm raising this sort of philosophical notions, and, you know, bear with me. And I think that you can follow them and sort of take them through to implications, perhaps, and how we think about the sort of language of documentary practice that we want to engage with in this century in order to sort of talk to the ways that lived experience has profoundly transformed. So perhaps a language that, you know, historically is more referenced in the 20th century, mid-20th century, 60s and 70s, maybe we need to return to interrogate this as, you know, producers and directors kind of did to a great extent in the 80s. And I guess one of my quibbles, and I'm sort of putting this forward to you since my job is to kind of, you know, kick off debate here, is first of all this problem of surveillance culture, and then secondly is how, in a sense, the kind of discourses, kind of historical discourses of critical documentary are not really engaged enough in the space of interactive documentary practice. So that's my second point. And the reason I think that's so important is because we live in a context where the experience of time and the ability to kind of intervene within time as a kind of radical proposition is perhaps more important than ever. So are we on One World? Oh, excellent, fantastic. Okay, so these ideas about time reflect the immersive nature of verite and real-time events. These arguments suggest that we need to raise questions, as I mentioned, about the form of documentary practice. And they bring us to my third point, which is to look at the sort of movements from documentary realism to sociable media, which is a term Judith Donath from MIT uses to talk about, you know, media that's kind of constructed and very process-driven and is very much about user-based contributions into a context that media makers propose to the user. And then tactical media and also citizen journalism. So many questions come up in this space. Who is a documentary for? Is it to convince others? Is it to empower the participants? Is it an intervention? And within the kind of practices of contributory documentary or user-based experience, where is skepticism? And how do we understand the ability to kind of introduce a sort of rhetoric or dialogue that's self-critical and self-reflexive into these spaces? So in the 1970s, I'm just going to check. I think I've got 7 minutes left or so. Am I okay? Yes?
7 minutes.
Okay, 7 minutes. All right. In the 1970s, documentary split between observation and intervention, in part through the work of ethnographic filmmakers and through a kind of critique of realism. And I've talked a little bit about that in my last conversation about time. And the belief that all knowledge is situated was an idea that ethnographers argued heartily about, and eventually believed that the ethnographer had to describe their own biases and be alert to the impact of their presence and to understand the kind of unpredictability of outcomes because of their interventions. Now, early verite directors believed that their cameras, which were set on location for months at a time, were really capturing reality as it unfolded. And this notion began to unravel, in particular through some of the dialogues that Trinity Minha, who is a feminist documentary producer, ethnographer, ethnographic filmmaker, and theorist, she insisted that modern ethnographic filmmakers had a responsibility to consciously represent their own position and to also attempt to construct the kind of cinematic gaze, that is, you know, the kind of understanding that the camera produced from the perspective of those who the camera was studying. So, for example, she shot her films about life in African villages at ground level as she observed that daily life occurred close to the ground, as she said, and used the movement of a circle as life was organized in a circular fashion. So on one hand, you have this sort of intervention within ethnography, the shift of sort of belief in, you know, we can observe the real, to filmmakers in that space who really revolutionized documentary practice, saying, wait a minute, you know, we're constructing a real. And then the other key direction, of course, for documentary was a kind of interventionist practice, most signified by the Challenge for Change program. So we want to be on the NFB's citizen site here. And radical documentary makers from this perspective perceive themselves as intervening into the context that they were studying, working lockstep with communities that they're researching or in fact documenting, and empowering them. Part of this practice included the desire to use media to actually shift power, to transform society in not only the way that knowledge was produced, but to actually transform material circumstances within the documentary context. So very far away from notions of a kind of real that you observe. So this meant that documentary subjects participated in even defining and refining the very questions that were asked. And notions of kind of collaborative inquiry into a kind of documentary subject emerged not only in the 60s, but I think are very much current today in terms of how we understand a radical practice within documentary. And you can see it in many of the video works that are part of Hot Docs. So the director, in a sense, in this context, and it's a contradictory term to use the term director, produces context, and leadership kind of moves through the process of making the documentary with everyone taking responsibility, in a sense, for facilitating discourse, discussion, representation, and many of the contributory works now constructed with this kind of philosophy that we're now seeing in the online environment teach people how to use cameras, teach people how to upload content, etc., etc. So Portrait of the Liberties is an example of this, which you may be seeing right now behind me. So if we then think about user-generated content, however, great, we have a problem, okay? And I want to leave you with this problem because we're going to move in a moment to just looking for a moment at a Yahoo site that I think is a very interesting sort of emblematic example. One can certainly argue for the need for empowerment, and that it's particularly acute in a period where technology is mystified and the processes of its presence and production are idealized. This certainly places pressure on the director to disclose and share not only the ways that content is captured, but the ways that technology structures that experience. But in a sense, you know, users and audiences are way ahead of us, and I think this is our challenge. It's one of the three challenges. There's a shift in the context and the relations of power that has amplified over the last 10 years with accessible and contributory media forms and technologies. Citizens themselves have taken control over the means of production, and almost any context where a documentary producer enters, they will be met with the expectation on the part of your subjects of some form of participation in the process of making media. And there's many examples of this, from the tactical media movement right through to certainly what Yahoo has now become. And there's a couple of examples of work that we're probably not going to get to, but I'll refer you to them, and we can put them up on the site for Hot Docs, that I think are very interesting in terms of sort of looking at tactical media and intervention. And one of them is the Yes Men site. So it's really using almost a kind of realist performance practice and reenactment to incite a situation that then unfolds both in media and in real time. So lots of use of sort of intervention in a documentary context that's highly theatrical. And then secondly, the kind of context of some of the work in YouTube that is in a way a sort of associative discursive structure. So hopefully behind me will be this. Okay, so this is the classic sort of YouTube you know, environment. And what's very interesting here, of course, is the way that sort of language, you know, and ideas sort of, because it's sort of search engine driven, you know, so you sort of start with the core piece of video and then somebody responds, but then it's associative because it's search-based and so and object-oriented. So you go off into beautiful Iran and then you've got a whole bunch of videos about beauty and then you've got a whole bunch of videos about skiing. But I thought we should end by just playing like 1.5 minutes of this clip, and it's called Skiing in Iran. And this young man, who is 18 years old, and you know, you won't have a chance because we don't have time to hear his testimony, but I suggest you go and hear him talk about the piece he made. And you kind of ride between thinking, is this irony? Is this serious? But it's quite a brilliant intervention because he went skiing in Iran. He's a Malaysian citizen, and he brought a bunch of his peers from different countries around the world, and they went skiing in Iran. And they talk about their experience skiing in Iran, and it's a counter video to, you know, the incredible amount of American, you know, anti-Iranian content that's now within the global media world. And it's made by an 18-year-old, and it's actually, frankly, quite eloquent and uses a kind of travelogue methodology. And then he kind of deconstructs the video when he talks about its making and his attempt in the first period when it was released to kind of answer, you know, 120,000 emails that he got. So I just want to leave you with these three questions for us to think about over the afternoon. And I know we're going to talk about markets and a lot of the kind of economic issues, but I think as documentary makers, we really have to step back and think about the context we're producing in. We need to think about issues of time and structure and, in a sense, form. And I think we also really need to think about this shift in the kind of ethical documentary to one where, in a sense, users and contributors are taking up that space at times more elegantly than perhaps we're able to. So I'll end there, but we're not hearing him. Oh, well.